The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manicero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manicero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, we've got a great show for you today. We've got a guest that isn't an old dog. You know, he's actually kind of a young pup here, but he definitely has lived a lot in the real estate investing world, and has got a great story to share with us. And I'm talking about Travis Watts. Travis has been investing in real estate since 2009. So it sounds like the Great Recession there. So I'm sure he's got some stories to share there. He is in multifamily, single family, and vacation rentals. So that, I guess when he got started out, he was in those areas. Today, Travis is the Director of Investor Relations at Ashcroft Capital, a national multifamily investment firm with more than $820 million in assets under management, where he has taken part in more than 30% of the Ashcroft opportunities. And so Ashcroft may be a familiar name because Joe Fairless has been on our show a number of times, and we've been on his. So it's definitely an amazing success story of what's happened at that firm. Well, Travis, wow, it's great to have you here. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network.
All right, Bill. Appreciate you having me. Thrilled to be here. Thank you so much.
Well, it's great to have you on. I know there's a lot of expertise you have you can share with our folks today. But first, you know, I'd love to hear your story. I understand you started sort of humble beginnings here, you know, where you grew up and how you got into this crazy real estate world.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to share. So as you alluded to, I'm a young pup, I guess. So I got into real estate when I was 20 years old. Bought my first single family home, then did house hacking, renting out spare bedrooms, was kind of reading the Robert Kiyosaki's books and the Rich Dad Company content. And it really just got me inspired, if nothing else. Didn't have a lot of clear direction or goals in the beginning, just kind of wanted to dive right in and see what it was all about. So I ended up doing, as you alluded to, some fix and flips, vacation rentals. I had some buy and hold single family. I would buy owner-occupied properties, live in them for 2 years, fix them up, and then sell them for tax-free gains. It's part of the IRS tax code. So I did a whole bunch of stuff like that very actively. And what was the reason I have to kind of laugh at that whole time frame was I was working in the oil industry, and I was working mostly away from home in other states. I ended up working overseas in the Middle East, and this job entailed 98-hour work weeks. So it was 14-hour days, 7 days a week. So you can imagine, as you're trying to self-manage a portfolio and you're adding more and more properties on top of a job and a commitment like that, how much free time you really have, which for me was negative.
I had negative time.
Yeah. So, you know, so 09 to about 2015, this was kind of my life. This is what I was doing. I really didn't have a life, to be honest with you. And, you know, I had to go back to the drawing board. I had to figure out a way that I could stay in real estate, that I could scale a portfolio, you know, keep acquiring properties without the time commitment. That was my big struggle, was it was taking way too much of my time commitment. So that's where I learned about the world of passive investing, things like apartment syndications, where investors are pooling capital together to buy larger deals, and I can be hands off. I'm not managing the tenants. I'm not having to find these properties, put them under contract, show up to the closing table, all that stuff. And so I made a big shift. You know, I had a big pivot moment in my life from 2015, 2016, where I went from 100% active hands on real estate to 100% passive hands off real estate. And that leads us through today. I've been doing that for, I don't know, 5-6 years, something like that. And best decision I ever made for myself. It freed up a lot of my time.
Wow. Well, let me take, there's some interesting things I want to ask you. So you moved to the Middle East, and I've actually had friends that have done that too in the oil industry, and and made incredible money. I mean, he this one friend of mine, yeah, just amazing money. So, and now imagine, you know, you're living there, you don't really have a lot to spend it on because you don't have any time to spend it. So, I mean, you're just pocketing all this cash and, you know, pouring it into your real estate investments, right? And how long were you there for?
Yeah, so I made a shift about 3 years into the oil job to go overseas. So I was there about 2 years in the Middle East.
Wow. That's amazing. Now, do you still have some of the properties that you bought back then, or have you since liquidated everything and went fully into passive investing?
Yeah, good question. I was a little skeptical at first, I'll be honest with you, about this whole syndication world and passive investing and the returns that I was looking at, the projected returns, I should say, seemed to me at the time to be too good to be true. I didn't understand how I could get those types of numbers doing absolutely nothing when they were kind of the same numbers I was getting doing all of this work. And so what happened was I just decided to do one syndication deal to try it out and see if it was the real thing. Kind of had to step back and be patient. It was pretty tough and watch the distributions come in, watch the reporting come in, and made sure this was a real thing. And I really just fell in love with the model when I realized that it was. And so I did sell 100% of all of my rental properties and the house that I was living in as an owner occupant and decided to rent just because I wanted to go all in. And that took about a year and a half or about 12 months or so to make that changeover.
Wow. Now that's a big transition. It is very different. You know, what did you know about, you know, finding a sponsor, the right, you know, a sponsor you could trust and a project that do well? I mean, how did you get into that aspect of it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So that was probably the biggest mistake I made when I got started, was putting way too much emphasis on a pro forma or the projected returns of a potential project and not vetting out the sponsor or the syndication team heavily enough. And so nowadays I do it the opposite. I feel that, in my opinion today, it's all about the sponsorship. It's all about the team and the track record and the experience of the individuals executing the business plan. And then it's probably, again, my opinion, but the market comes second. You want to be in a, you know, high growth market where jobs are relocating to and people are relocating to. And then third is the deal itself, which is what I used to put all my emphasis on. And the idea there is, you know, and I got stories I could share with you, but the idea is that if you get one and two in the proper order, then number three just kind of falls into place, you know, for the most part. So, yeah, that's kind of how I look at it today and how I looked at it back then. I knew enough to be a little dangerous, but I certainly didn't know what I know today.
And, you know, finding that first deal, you know, did you do a lot of research in terms of, you know, the sponsors' backgrounds and so forth?
Right, exactly. So that's all the stuff that I've learned, you know, over these past, you know, 5-6 years is how to properly vet sponsorship teams and how to look at their background and their track record, their experience. And also, I should point out that leading up to, you know, COVID-19, coronavirus, all this lockdown stuff, I was out nationwide going to real estate conferences and seminars. So I kind of got a really cool inside look and a very unique perspective on how this industry works. And I got the opportunity to meet and to mingle with thousands and thousands of passive investors doing what I'm doing. So I've really built a really great network of folks 5, 10, 15, 20 years beyond where I'm at, to kind of leverage their expertise too, to ask a lot of questions and to, you know, we send deals back and forth that we're investing in and stuff like that. So leveraging people, this is a people business, that's real estate in general. And, you know, that's how you do it.
Yeah, that's the truth. And plus when you do make those network contacts, you know, referrals are really valuable, especially if it's people you trust and you know, yes, well, then, you know, at least that gets you into, you know, what deals to do your own due diligence on. But still, there's a real advantage. Now, are you from Texas or by any chance?
No, Colorado. Lived in Colorado and Florida the last decade, and a little bit in New York City.
Ah, okay. Because you mentioned the oil business. I didn't know if that was something you started in Texas or not. But there's a lot of syndication stuff going on in Texas. I know that, you know, there's some big conferences there. I didn't know, you know, if you got involved with any of those that are going on. But yep. That's definitely definitely a good place to start, is just getting the education there. But
Yeah, you're exactly right. Dallas Fort Worth is like the hub of multifamily conferences. It seems to be that, you know, I don't know, 3 out of 5 of them are hosted somewhere in Texas. So yeah, you're exactly
same
right.
Like that. Yeah, it's like the real estate guys, they got their syndication thing, and you've got the lifestyle people and the other. I mean, there's just like a lot of different folks down there, but interesting. Wow. So this is really interesting for me, because I have met people that have just been involved as passive investors, and some of these guys have, you know, tripled, quadrupled their money over the years, and I'm going, seriously, you know, you're getting those kinds of returns. And you know, not only, you know, are you getting your preferred, you know, interest rate, but then you've got when the property is sold and the equity play at the end. So do you, for your, you know, when you first started off, and I don't know what, you know, what you was a 506B or 506, you know, C or whatever, did you, you know, stay with that operator, and or did you find another deal and sort of do a 1031, you know, just keep your money riding, so to speak, in passive investments?
Yeah, good question. No, the first operators I had partnered with were actually local groups. I don't know why I felt like that was important to partner up with somebody local in my own city. But, you know, in my experience, most of the better operators were not located where I lived. And so I did a couple deals with them early on and ultimately decided that there's bigger players out there, you know, as I got to networking a little more and started, you know, the picture started to paint itself. And yeah, a lot of people asked me about the 1031 and all that. And one thing I could have done is 1031 my single family homes over into syndications. That can be difficult to execute. Just for simplicity's sake, I chose not to do that. So I went ahead and I took a tax hit. But as you know, real estate's, you know, tax advantage. So I'm looking at, in some cases, long-term capital gains and all that kind of stuff. As I've gotten into the syndications, very few operators offer 1031 exchanges on the back end of their deals. But a few of them do. And a lot of people love it. And that's great. For me, I don't follow it. I don't do the 1031 structure. And my reasoning behind that is two things. One is it's a lot harder to continuously do 1031 exchanges throughout your entire lifetime if you're going to be in the syndication space. And the reason is there's a lot less deal flow. There's a lot less of these deals happening out there. So you may come to a point in your career that it's hard to execute. You might do it once or twice or three times, and then one day there's no deals that you want to invest in. So you may have a tax burden at that point, one that could be substantially high, one that I don't want to have pop up on my radar. Number two is when you 1031 into a syndication, if it's not coming from a deal with that same operator. So if I'm with one operator and I want a 1031, now I want to roll those funds to a different firm's deal. A lot of times the minimum is very high. It might be $1 million minimum. It might be a $6 million minimum. So that also makes it very tricky. But not to play it down, it's a great strategy. It's just one that if you commit to it, you may want to stick that out till the day you die, basically.
Sure. Well, when was your first syndication that you invested in?
That was in 2015.
Okay. So things were pretty hot at that time. I mean, very hot.
Yeah,
still.
Sure.
So I imagine, you know, you're getting some great returns. Was it a 3-year hold or 5-year hold, or what was the, do you remember the deal?
Yeah. And I have to laugh because, you know, one thing to always think about when you're doing syndications, it's at the discretion of the general partnership. So, and everything you're looking at is a forecast, it's a best guess, it's a projection. So when you go into these deals, you know, it might say, well, we intend to hold this for 5 years or 7 years, but what you might find is 3 years down the road, you're out of the deal. They sold it. And that's out of your control in most cases. So, but it should be in the best interest of everyone if that happens. And what happened in my experience with those is exactly that. I thought I was going into these 5 to 7 year holds, and it's like 18 months later to 24 months later, they're putting the properties up for sale. Because of the market, mostly, we had some incredible offers come through, and it was just one of those tough decisions of, you know, do we take a 30% profit today, or do we continue holding this thing for 8% cash flow? And a lot of investors would just rather have a 30% return and go ahead and put that money into another deal moving forward.
Right. So that first deal it's pretty quick then. It seemed like. Now you just kept those funds though in syndication. Did you, you know, sort of hold the funds until you found another good deal, or is it the same money? In other words, this keeps growing and you just, you know, you keep investing, or do you take, you know, portions of it and go to different types of deals, or how are you managing that?
Yeah, great point. And kind of the irony, I guess, behind, you know, being a so-called full-time passive investor, a hands-off investor, is that when things do sell, it can be a little more hands-on again, because now you got that money back. You got to go find another operator, another deal. You got to sign docs. You got to vet them out. You know, you have to make decisions again, unlike a lot of the stock market stuff, for example, where you can just keep it turning over and reinvesting forever, you know, theoretically. So yeah, it's, you know, if I put, you know, 50,000 into a deal and several years later, I'm looking at, oh, I got, you know, 75, 80 grand now. I'm usually just splitting that up again, and I'll do two new deals with, you know, 50 each or something like that. So it is kind of constantly a game of where are you going to move the money next? Because in my experience, a lot of the deals have sold in 3 to 5 years. That's kind of been the average time frame.
Wow. And that's still the case today, even though, you know, cap rates are, well, today I know it's probably a tough misnomer. Let me say, like, through the end of last year, I mean, even then it was getting pretty compressed in terms of cap rates and stuff. But you're still getting those quick turnarounds, huh?
Yeah. So obviously, with that caveat that here we're in very interesting times, and we, you know, nobody really has the crystal ball at this very moment. So nothing in my portfolio is currently for sale. I think a lot of syndicators are just pumping the brakes to say, let's see how this whole thing pans out. And the hope is obviously in the next 12 to 24 months that our markets start normalizing again and that we can get back to business, but nobody knows. We don't know what that's going to look like. So yeah. So if you were in a deal that started 5 years ago and the idea was to sell in five, and here we are today, that 5 year deal might turn into a 7 year deal. And that's, again, part of the thing to think about personally when you're investing in the space is these are oftentimes illiquid investments. It's not a stock. You don't just hit the sell button tomorrow and get out. So you're at the discretion of a general partnership to, you know, look at the markets and look at the offers they're getting, if any, and just make the best decision on behalf of everyone.
Right. Have you ever been tempted sort of just to go with the long-term deals? You know, there are those groups of folks out there that are syndicating for 10 years and, yes. And you know, has that ever appealed to you, or do you kind of like the equity play?
Yeah, good question. I have invested with groups that they will underwrite a deal to not sell the property. So the idea behind that is, let's say you put in $50,000 in a deal like that. Every 2 to 3 years, let's say on average, the idea would be to refinance the property because you've been able to increase the value, raise the rents, it's worth more now, and then send back to the investors part of their original capital contribution. So if you look at that over, let's say, a 10-year time frame, theoretically, or ideally, I should say, you would have that $50,000 back in your pocket through refinances, and you continue holding that asset long term for the cash flow and any potential gains it may have. I do like that model. Not the norm, but you know, I've done maybe 15% of my portfolio in deals like that. But I like the 5 year. That's kind of the normal. That's kind of the industry standard as a value add 5 year underwriting, where you just bump the rents and you rebrand the asset, change out the management, do all these things. And then you've kind of maxed out the value potential at the moment and you cash in and you move on to another deal. So in a way, I like that. I wish they could all be exactly 5 years. I think that's a good time frame for me personally versus 18 months. That's a little bit too hands-on and active. But at the same time, yeah, it's everybody's different. And just know that there's groups that have all different models out there you can participate in.
Sure. Now, when you're looking at, you know, an operator or a deal, what are the top three things that you need to look at before you can make any decision on that deal?
Yeah, I'd say number one would be making sure that your criteria fits what this operator is doing. I think that's the most critical thing to look at. And what I mean by that is you need to first identify with yourself, do you like new development projects? Do you like value add projects? Do you like self-storage investing? Do you like mobile home parks? Do you like affordable housing, multifamily? There's so many things to invest in out there. You need to identify what it is you're really after and why that is, and then match that up to operators doing just that. You know, with a misalignment of interest like that, I think it's going to be a struggle, you know, through the whole business plan for you, the individual. Number two is track record and experience. That was just from my own lessons learned early on. Find groups that are consistent in their business model, that have done this over and over again, that can show you proof and results of past performance, and make sure that they're being conservative. You know, and there's a lot of ways to kind of read between the lines. We don't have time here on this show to go through it all, but you know, it's just understanding that they're being conservative with their approach. And you know, lastly, it's you know, as far as the GP team, you want to just get along with the individual human beings that are doing this business plan. I mean, they should ideally be like a friend almost, or like a really strong, good business partner in a sense, because these are long-term relationships. We're talking 5 to 7 years, you're going to be in communication with these folks, either monthly or quarterly. You're going to be joining conference calls and webinars. And, you know, if they don't pass what I call the gut check, that's going to be tough. You know, the last thing you want to do is start feeling uncomfortable with the people behind the scenes, you know, 6 months in, and then having to deal with that for 5 years in a row.
That's a great, great point. You've kind of mentioned you had some experiences that, you know, that have been a little bit tough here and stuff. So, what would you say sort of is maybe a mistake or something that you did that, you've learned from that you could maybe share with other people that are looking at passive investing, and that might be a key thing that you learned from that you can share with others?
Yeah, I think number one, and we've already kind of touched on it, is just, you know, understanding the sponsorship team's background and overall philosophy and track record. You have to make sure that the business plan they're proposing to you is reasonable and achievable and conservative. And I guess a story to share with that is I made an investment with the group where the pro forma looked incredible. The returns were just, they were great. They weren't, you know, fantasy land, but they were very strong, stronger than any other deals that have been sent my way. Well, when I dug deeper into the business plan, it was a huge, huge, huge value add where they had very low occupancy. They were gutting all the units all the way down to the studs. They were restarting essentially this entire community from scratch. It was almost like a development deal, and they hadn't done it before. And, you know, sure enough, fast forward a couple years later, they couldn't execute the business plan. They got a little ways along the line. They realized it was going to cost a lot more than they thought. It was going to take a lot longer than they thought. They couldn't get the financing they hoped they could get. It was a disaster ultimately. Now, thankfully, we didn't lose any money on the deal. But that's because it was in a good market and they bought it at a very cheap price. But the lesson there was to really vet out the sponsorship team for sure. And the second thing I'll say about mistakes, quote unquote mistakes, is invest in what you understand, invest in what you know, what makes logical sense. I made the mistake of shying away from real estate a little bit in this passive journey. And I made an investment in a syndication fund that bought distressed debt off the bank's books, and they tried to collect on it. And long story short, we lost money. And so it was just one of those, you know, I didn't really fully understand all the ins and outs, which was my fault. But, you know, stick to what you know and what makes sense.
Great. What have you done that, let's say, you say is sort of your biggest success as a passive investor?
Biggest success as a passive investor to me was just self-reflecting to identify that the passive route was right for me. It's not right for everyone, but I had to really look at facts and say, you know, I was career focused at the time. I didn't have the time commitment to dedicate. And to be honest with you, though I was doing fix and flips, vacation rentals, and all these things, frankly, I wasn't good at it. And that took a lot of self-reflection and being honest with myself to say, you know, there's people out there doing this a lot better than me. Why don't I just piggyback off the success and their track record, and I'll just share in the profits instead of trying to beat them. You know, can't beat them, join them, right?
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, our audience are primarily folks that 50 years of age and older that are either approaching retirement or they already in their retirement years, and they're looking at real estate investing as a means to help them to mm-hmm. not only sort of make their, you know, nest egg last longer, but, you know, maybe they just the return that they're getting in their pension and Social Security, whatever, is there's a gap there and they're trying to fill it with cash flow, for example. Mm-hmm. What advice would you have for those folks? Again, you know, looking at it from your past as a passive investor here, what kind of case can you make, so to speak, for passive investing as opposed to, you know, getting active and buying rental properties or something along those lines?
Yeah, I guess the best story I can share with you is that of my dad. So my dad's in his late 60s, and when he was in his early 60s, he was looking at, you know, how am I going to retire? And I was sitting down with him. We were kind of crunching numbers, trying to figure all this stuff out with pensions and Social Security. And he had a lot of single family rentals. When I say a lot, he had, I don't know, 7 or 8 at the time. And so meanwhile, I was doing syndication investing. And so what we kind of came up with in that situation was he enjoyed having a single family rentals locally. He enjoyed you know, talking with his tenants. They were great people. They got along. I mean, it was really a great thing for him. However, he recognized that if he were to have 10 or 15 or 20 single family homes, it would become a job for him, even if he put a property manager on the properties. And being that he actually wanted to fully retire, not be like a landlord per se all through his retirement, he stopped doing single family investing at, I think it was 8, he capped it. And he started doing syndications because he wanted to continue expanding his portfolio and increasing his cash flow, but not his time commitment. And I think that was the key right there. Is it's to me, this whole thing about passive investing is about your time. And that's personal. That's for everyone. Some people love to be hands-on and they're very handy and they like to go fix up houses and they're good at that. I'm not good at that. And I don't want to spend the time doing it either. So passive investing makes a lot of sense for me. And but I'm an extreme case. I'm a full-time passive. Most people are just, they have a hand in it, right? They've done 3 or 4 syndications, but they've got a lot of their portfolio elsewhere doing other things.
Well, apparently you did really well in terms of your understanding. I mean, you are the director of investor relations. So in that kind of capacity, are you using your experience as a passive investor, or is it a new area for you?
Yeah, good question. So what I talk about a lot on not only podcasts, but my blogs and the content that I create online is financial independence, right? Financial freedom. And specifically when you're younger, like I am, I don't necessarily want to retire, right? I don't want to have the absence of work in my life. What I do want to do is pursue avenues of interest that I can personally develop from, you know, things that I'm passionate about. I get the freedom and the flexibility to go do those things. And so that's what led me to an investor relations role, is I have the unique opportunity to speak with other investors out there as to how syndications work and why passive income and why hands-off is appealing, and share these stories and these lessons learned. And to me, I perceive that as being a way to give back. I certainly don't need to be doing this. I could choose to do nothing, but I would be bored out of my mind in about 2 weeks. And I don't know what. I'd have to go back to creating content or writing blogs or doing something. So that's what it's all about for me, is just I've chosen to give back to others and share experience and what I found to be most impactful in my life when it comes to money, finance, and investing.
Yeah, that's great. And the fact that you're an investor, you know what the investor wants in terms of information and communication and the kinds of things that you probably oversee in that role, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. So, and I always come from that perspective. You know, there's so many investor relations out there that are, you know, just great people, but just paid kind of to do the 9-to-5 grind and answer questions, you know, according to the book or whatever, or the PPM. But I like to just share my actual experience as a passive investor with people. And again, the lessons learned, and I love networking because I get so much out of that. Both in the terms of giving back to others, but also, you know, hey, have you invested with this other group? What's your experience been? And that's how I find a lot of opportunities as well.
Oh, that's great. Well, you know, you're definitely a young guy, and you've done some great stuff already. What's sort of your long-term play? What are you looking at in the next 10, 20 years down the road? Where do you see yourself?
That's a good question. As long as I'm pursuing avenues that I'm passionate about, I see myself continuing along the same type of path. A couple people in my network are in their late 60s, maybe even early 70s. And, you know, they've found different creative avenues to share and give back as well. Some have gone to create real estate meetup groups. I'm in a few of those. These are folks that have done 100+ syndication deals. I've done about 30. So, you know, reasonable time frame, 5-10 years down the road, I hope to be doing that type of stuff. I love the industry. I'm passionate about it. But if anything changes for any reason, I want to keep pursuing what I love. That's the benefit of having kind of the financial independence, in my opinion.
That's great. Well, the time has zipped by, Travis. It's a shame because there's a lot to talk about in this area. But I think, yeah, you gave us a good overview, and I think some real good points and tips there too, as well, for people that are either currently passively investing or those that are considering it. So it's been very helpful. We have a segment here we call our Wrap It Up, where I ask you a series of quick questions about resources that you have come across and share your resources with the folks that are listening. So if you are ready, we can wrap it up.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First question, favorite real estate book?
Ooh, wow, that's so hard. I've read so many real estate books. That's incredibly hard. Oh man. Okay, let's do this. I'm gonna throw this one out there because it had a profound impact on my real estate approach in general, and that was Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright, showing you all sorts of tax advantages to being an investor and a small business owner, as you could relate that to real estate, I suppose.
Oh, that's a great book. Great book.
Yeah.
How about just a favorite sort of general business book?
General business book. I'm a huge fan of Tony Robbins, and I don't know, you may call this a business book or not, but I love Awaken the Giant Within, which is a lot about mindset, goal setting, but it's also just achievement, again, as that pertains to business. And that's timeless. That book was probably made in like the early 90s, but 90% of it's still applicable today. So that's a great one.
Great. How about most valuable website for success? And that of course, would be other than your own business.
Yeah, that's a great one. You know, there's a couple websites out there that are in the works right now where you can vet out syndication groups. The problem is they haven't yet really hit momentum. So I'm a little hesitant to kind of throw those out there. I would say, how about BiggerPockets? I'm all about networking and forums and a place where you can ask your questions, whether experienced or amateur in the industry. And endless amounts of resources through BiggerPockets.
Yeah, that's a top of my list, definitely. How about favorite app?
Favorite app? You know, I use an app called Tiny Scan. I know maybe that's kind of boring, but it's just an app where you can scan things straight into a PDF and it looks like you actually scanned it through like an old school scanner. And I'm always having to do that for some reason. I don't know why in 2020 we're still doing this kind of stuff, but that's been a super helpful. I've never owned a scanner in my life, but I've had this app for years and it comes in handy weekly.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I've got, that's one of my favorite apps on mine too.
That's hilarious.
I like it is that I can fax my scans. Now the real estate business, yeah, you'd think would be so sophisticated. You know, who does faxes anymore? I mean, real estate, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's
and banks, some banks are just like, you know, way, and just, and I don't have a fax machine, you know, so I have to do it online if I'm like my desktop, but yeah, I like this little app. I can scan it in, fax it all in the same motion. So that's kind of fun. Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to go off on my favorite there, but okay. How about a favorite quote?
Favorite quote. You know, I've been reflecting a lot this year because I passed my 10 years in real estate. Cause I started in 2009, kind of in the fall. So Tony Robbins has a quote says, and I have to kind of paraphrase this, but it's something to the extent of, most people overestimate what they can achieve in 1 year and they underestimate what they can achieve in a decade. And I think that couldn't be more true, as we all just want instant results. And I'd like to have a six pack in 2 months, and I'd like to make $1 million this year and all these different things, but it's just not realistic. But if you put that in a longer time frame, a lot can be achieved. I think more than most people can really comprehend.
That's great. Well, you're proof of that. Definitely. It sounds like in terms of your investment strategies, it sounds like you got a good plan going there. And then finally, this one here, if this is sort of our apocalyptic question here, if you lost absolutely everything you have, okay, all your assets, and all you have left is just $1,000 in cash in your hand, what would you do with that $1,000, knowing what you know? With that $1,000 to rebuild your real estate investing business?
Wow, $1,000. I would probably start with spending the majority on that on some educational materials to learn a different strategy that I never utilized from the beginning. For example, if I were to back up years ago and if I had been a syndicator myself on the active side of the business, the general partnership, that's something you can do with a lot less capital starting out. So I may have chose a model more like that and then shifted over to being passive later on. So education is my short answer to that, self-education.
Mm, good answer. Well, I'm sure there's a lot of folks, Travis, that are interested in what you're saying and maybe even want to contact you if you're okay with that. What would be a good way for folks to reach you or at least find out about you and what you do?
Sure. Yeah, a couple things. I spend my weeks, you know, in 15 to 30 minute blocks talking to investors at all different levels, some accredited, some non-accredited, some 18-year-olds and some 70-year-olds. And we talk about just whatever. I'm open to networking and discussing. I will send you my calendar link for your listeners where we can, I'm happy to connect on a 15 to 30 minute call. It's just kind of like a Q&A call. It's just free. It's giving my time back to others. That's the best way. So hopefully you can throw that out there somewhere in the show notes or something. Additionally, I'm on Bigger Pockets. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. My last name is Watts, W-A-T-T-S. So it's Travis Watts. So look me up, Google me, YouTube, whatever, and let's connect. Happy to hop on a call and be a resource for anyone.
Very cool. Well, thank you for making yourself available there. That a lot of good knowledge that I'm sure you can share with our folks. Well, this is the end of our show here. We have a tradition here, all of our guests that come on the Old Dogs REI Network, and that is our guests close us out with their best old hound dog howl. So I know you've been practicing this all week long, right, Travis?
Believe it or not, that's one thing I forgot to do, but I'm going to wing it. I don't even know what a hound dog sounds like, but we're going to do it.
Like, come on, you were in Colorado. You know, they got like, wolves and stuff like that. You know, I mean, right? There's like, okay. All right. Well, just give us your best shot here.
I don't know what that was. It may have been a dying dog.
It was in his last moment there.
He just fallen off a cliff in Colorado, but it's all good.
That was great, Travis. Thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great, great show. I really enjoyed it.
All right, Bill. Thanks for having me.
I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we really appreciate it. Please note, everything that we talked about today with Travis, everything he talked about, will be detailed in our extensive show notes at the Old Dogs website at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Travis Watts. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.